very high point of my year is Mishnas Tovi Vivek Symposium here colloquially, here in West Hampton. And I had the opportunity to come together with friends, but not just come together with friends, to come together with friends and to learn together with friends. It's an extraordinary experience for me, and I hope the experience of learning together is as meaningful to you as it is to me. These are very difficult days in Israel, and we know that what Hamas would like to do is to disrupt the normal lives of people in Israel, and our learning is part of continuing those normal lives. And in addition to our learning being an Iluy Neshama for Rebbetzin Vivek, I pray that our learning is also for the merit of the soldiers who are today fighting in Gaza. I'd like to recognize several people who are here in the room. First of all, I'd like to recognize everyone who's here in the room and to greet everyone who's in the room. It's a particular honor to be delivering this shiur, learning together with you, in the presence of our beloved Gabby Kapp and her sister Debbie's wife, who are the daughters of Rebbetzin Vivek. And you know, one looks at both of you and one sees your mother in the beauty and grace of your faces and in your love of Torah. And we thank you for giving us this opportunity. I'd also like to recognize the members of the boards, the various boards of Mishmat, who are so involved all year in creating the school in Israel from which Torah is coming forth to you. Sharon Mintz, the president of American Friends of Mishmat, Wendy Greenbaum, who is the vice president of American Friends of Mishmat and the chair of Mishmat's International Board of Governors, Razi Weitzman, who is our board member. And so many of us have gotten used to Razi at the shiur that was held the years at Gabby's house, being the person who would bring us together and tell us, okay, it's time to start learning. And of course, Judy Tuckman, who has who sponsored the Kiddush this Shabbat and who has done so much Kiddush Mad over the course of the years, and especially in a project which is so close to my heart, retraining Israel's mikvah ladies. You want to hear about that? Come over to either me or to Judy and speak about that afterwards. And our president emerita, without whom Mishmat would not be, who is Harriet Schimmel, and who remains so active. Now, we have so many people here who everyone's name needs to be mentioned, but I can't not mention the two people who come furthest for this annual colloquium, and that is Gary Liebesman and Stacy Lehman. Stacy is a Mishmat alumna, an alumna of our board, and it's wonderful to see the two of you coming from Columbus, Ohio, to come here and to learn. There's another alumna sitting there, Candace. There are others sitting around the room. And finally, I'd like to mention Janine, who is standing up. Janine Kay has just joined Mishmat as our executive director in the United States. And Janine, it's a great pleasure to welcome you and to wish you good luck in your work. And of course, Debbie Spinner of Mishmat Israel is sitting here. I would like to open by saying to Hilim, I think here we are, and a part of us all is waiting to get back to the computer and to check what's going on in Israel. And as I am speaking, there's a funeral which is ending on Herzl right now, these moments. My husband is there I would have been there together with him. The funeral is of Moshe Maleko, a young Ethiopian, whose sister is now a third-year student at Mishmat. She's studying to be a special education teacher. And he was killed yesterday. He's one of eight children in the family that made its way from Ethiopia to Israel with such travail. So many of you had part in helping to bring Ethiopia's Jews to Israel. And the story of our people is the story of defending our land, of persisting despite the travail. And it's particularly sad when you say, here's a young man who has overcome so much in life, and now he has been killed. So I'm going to read in Hebrew and English to Tehillim Kuf Chaf Aleph. I ask you all to please rise if you can.
For Tehillim, and I apologize. Rabbi Schneier, there's somebody I think that might be parked in Rabbi Schneier's spot, and I think he is on his way. So just at courtesy to the Rav, if somebody is parked, I think it's along here, to move the car. I apologize.
There's the sign.
Please join me either in your hearts or in your voices in the same tikkunim. Shir la'alot, Esai nai ogarim me'ay yavo esri, Esri ve'im Adonai ose shamay v'aris, Al yitei lalot yalecha, al yalum sholecha, Hine lo yalum ve'lo yishai sholem Yisrael. Adonai shomrecha, Adonai tzilcha al-yad minecha. Yomam ha-shemesh lo yakecha, v'yareach b'layla. Adonai yishmarcha mikol ra, yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzedcha u'borecha, me'atcha ve'ad olam. A song of ascent, I will lift up my eyes unto the mountains, from whence shall my help come. My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not suffer your foot to be moved. He that keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he that keeps Israel does neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade upon your right hand. The sun shall not smite you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord shall keep you from all evil. He shall keep your soul. The Lord shall guide your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forever. Amen.
Amen.
Let us learn together.
It's a New Jersey license plate that helps. And I think Mariah Carey is one of them, right? C15DNJ.
I gave you two anecdotes to read, two stories to read, and I asked you to define the difference between kibud and moda, between honoring and revealing. And it's very interesting because these two mitzvot in the Torah apply to one's parents, but also apply to God. We have a mitzvah of honoring God, kabeh et Hashem mehoncha, and we have a mitzvah of fearing God, Hashem elokecha tira, of revering or fearing God. We have this both regarding God and regarding the parents. So, reading the definition in the Talmud, what's the difference between kibud, honoring, and between mora, which is revering? You read this. Candace.
sustenance, making sure that they have food, that they have clothes taken care of, get the doctor to take care of their daily sustenance and needs. We are in reverent attitude with the way that you treat them in terms of respect, not interrupting them.
Ah, you just got it. Not. Food is what we do, and the Talmud stipulates three kinds of services, which are the basic services that the parent provides to the child when the child is dependent. And when the tables are turned, the child is required to provide those services to the parent. The services that Candace mentioned. Mora, on the other hand, is defined as what you don't do. And what do you not do in the Gemara?
Sitting there.
You don't sit in their place, you don't stand in their place, you don't interrupt them, and you don't contradict them. And the last one is most interesting. What else do you not do? One doesn't intervene on their behalf. And I think that these laws, which are so well-defined regarding the parent, do not just apply to the parent. They give us the sensitivity to understand how we deal with people, whether they're younger or older, who are dealing with travail. What does it mean, what doesn't intervene on his behalf? It means that the parent is saying something in a conversation, and the parent is right, but not making their case strongly enough, you intervene on their behalf. That would seem to be a wonderful thing to do, right? Wendy?
You don't want to diminish the authority or the role of the parent, so that's what you're doing.
Diminishing their authority? What else? You're right. What else? What else? Why is intervening on behalf of the parent or on behalf of an elderly person, on behalf of a sick person? Why is that a problem? This could be a sick person in their 20s.
It's saying that you're making them seem incapable.
Right. It takes, yes.
Respect.
It is respect. And it is also the fact that sometimes, under certain circumstances, a person can get out their ideas, but it's just going to take longer. And we, especially in modern society, are so very impatient. So someone is trying to get someplace. Do we help them get to that place by cutting them off? Or if they need a cue, so then we assist them. But if they don't need a cue, and they're just trying to express themselves, do we tell them, we'll do it for you, or do we give them the space to do it themselves? Which is exactly what brings you to the first of the two stories, which is the simple story. The simple story is the story of the fat and pheasant. The story of the ptamim, tumot, as in the language of the Yerushalmi and Peah. Someone is feeding his father fat and pheasant. And what does the father ask?
Where'd you get
this from? And what does the son answer? I asked you to see if you can punctuate that Yerushalmi to figure out what the son said and what's commentary on what the son said. What does the son say? He calls his grandfather Saba, his father Saba. And he says, Saba, Saba. What else does he say? Echol ve'adish, eat and shoot. The next words, diklavim only the dashim, is this what the son says?
No.
I don't think so. I think this is the Yerushalmi's commentary on what the son says, that he's speaking to him, he's dressing him like a dog, that a dog eats and shoots. But that's not what he says to his father. He simply says to his father, grandpa, grandpa, eat and shoot. Now you tell me, what is so dreadful about that makes this son lose his place in the world to come? What's so horrible about telling his father? I mean, it's not, is it nice? No, I don't think it's nice. But is it that horrible? Eat and shoot? Grandpa, eat and shoot.
First one calls him grandpa.
Why is he calling him grandpa?
What do you
going to waste my time telling you. And I used, once upon a time, you were signing the checks. So when you were signing the checks, you could ask me whatever you wanted to ask me. But today I'm signing the checks, and it's not for you to question. What do you think sets off the sun? You can read this in a whole lot of different ways. What do you think is troubling the sun?
Well,
yes.
His father is questioning where he got the money to buy this expensive aircraft. So that undermines the son. And so in reaction to that, he strikes back at his father. He calls him grandpa and implies that he has to have instructions on how to eat.
And it's in your opinion, the son is doing something wonderful for the father. And the father is questioning that. In other words, the son sees himself as doing something wonderful for the father, and he doesn't appreciate being questioned, having his motivation called into question. Anyone else? Yes?
I think it's more that the son feels that he's just been put down by his father, you know, because the father says, well, how could you afford something like this? Instead of the son answering in a respectful way anyway, because it's his father, he flies off the handle.
Judy.
Well, I mean, I see it more as, you know, the son just wants to write a check and not deal with the father. I'll give you the fat and pheasant, but don't start with your questions. I don't want to, you know, really bother with you too much. That's kind of what I see.
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, the son is focusing on the honor part rather than the fear part. In other words, they only honor your difficult food, but there's no fear.
In other words, it's much more challenging to have to check one's expressions than it is to provide services. The Gemara, in fact, goes on with another story that I did bring you, in which the Gemara challenges someone who was maintaining that he was performing the mitzvah wonderfully. The Gemara says, did she throw your wallet into the water and you keep quiet? Now, you're allowed to stop her from throwing that wallet into the water. But she has thrown the wallet into the ocean. There's absolutely nothing you can do. Do you start screaming and raging? Or do you somehow manage to hold that reaction back? And you, it's the restraint that he's not exercising. In other words, he's providing the services, but he's not providing the restraint. Anyone else? Can you think of what might be on the father's mind? What might be motivating the question? He's giving him the finest fat and pheasant. Can't get better. Can you think what might be on the father's mind?
Is it
what he might be worried about?
Is it kosher?
Do you mean, is it kosher means, is he laundering ill-begotten funds through the mitzvah of kibud av va'em? Is it, you know, kosher amounts a lot of things, and not just the slaughter of a piece of meat. What, you know, are these funds ill-begotten, and he's performing a mitzvah with them? Yes?
Maybe he's worried his son is spending too much money on him.
That happens all the time, you know, that the parent wishes to deny themselves for the purpose of the child. And it's very possible.
Harry, I was going to say something similar when I used to go to visit my grandmother with my father, and he would bring her groceries every Wednesday, and she would say, and she would insist on having the tape so that she could pay him to the penny, and then would insist that he hadn't given her all the expenses. It is, it can be, and I used to feel that that was demeaning of my father, that she was demeaning of him as an adult who could do a job for me, so that could also be an emotion that's brought out by this question.
Yes, said Tina?
Or it could simply mean that the role reversal, the fact that the father, you know, on one level, on one part of him knows he's dependent, but the relinquishing of, you know, his ability to pay for things, you know,
it's very hard.
Right. So he's trying to recapture the vestige of what he wants to have.
Wow.
Oh, I just see it very simply that maybe the father wanted to start a conversation.
Can you hear Judy in the back?
Oh, I'll talk louder. see it very simply as maybe the father just wanted to start a conversation with his son and keep him there and talk.
Yeah.
Yes.
I know. My feeling is it's not necessarily as negative as that it doesn't have to be. My father-in-law always also, whatever he bought or did for him, his first things for, did you have to do it, or we don't need, you know, that was just his way. He was uncomfortable maybe getting it, but he enjoyed it in the end, and it was more of a way to talk and a way to bring it out. It wasn't quite that negative.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I would say that we're focusing a lot on the father's question and not the son's response, right? Because the father had... I think so many of us are right about the father's feelings about, you know, that he's providing for me, he's providing so well, but the son's response is so harsh and ugly. And that really reflects either a horrible relationship between the two of them, or the son who's just very crossed. I mean, there's something wrong with this response that's so off the scale, in my opinion.
We should know that the Gemara usually illustrates a point by an extreme story, Sipurei Katzeh, by an extreme story. And the Gemara wishes us to understand there's an extreme story here. The son calling his father, grandpa, is making a statement, a very, as you say, harsh statement. There was, yes, please.
It's as though the son, by giving him a very expensive dinner, is saying, the show is sort of showing off, and then they get the feeling that by providing the very expensive dinner, he doesn't have to give him anything else. He doesn't have to give him love, respect, blah, 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 or even affection.
And
this very expensive.
And what the parent is looking for is not the expensive dinner.
Right. You can keep the fillet, you know, just give me something, this, something emotional for me, rather than this expensive.
I think you're just looking into it. I think that the son just wanted to be especially good. And I think, and I don't think he was trying to, we have no clue that he's trying to absolve himself that. Of other responsibilities, and I think maybe I'm guilty of that also. That my daughter's always buying these things, and I always say, oh, I don't need it, and I think I won't do that anymore.
There's chesed on both sides, the giving, but also the receiving, are both part of a partnership that makes the relationship work. It can't work without both sides, without a gracious recipient as well as a gracious giver. Okay, let's go. Oh, yes, please.
I think it also underlines that people are in different places, in different generations. I feel they're out of context. Like the son is looking at it from his perspective, which has a new joy, and the father is more and looking into it, so that people are at different places.
Yeah, and I have to add, to amplify that comment, that the son who's working presumably has a limited amount of time, and when he's saying eat and swallow, what he wants to get on with his life.
It's just so different.
He wants to get on with his work, and his father may be looking for some attention and kindness and... the kind of thing which, in retrospect, we say to ourselves, I wish I had had a little more patience. Okay, let's go on to the second story. The second story is again much more complicated. Oh, and I asked you before that about Avimi. That was a very easy and very quick story, a very beautiful story. It's the story of three generations. Rabbi Abahu is the aged father. Avime is the middle-aged son, and he has three b'nei samche. B'nei samche means either of two things. It either means sons who have already been ordained as rabbis. That's one way of reading it. And if that's the case, five sons already ordained as rabbis means that the sons of what ages, let's say they started 18, children in the Talmudic world are not born every year because the mother is nursing the child. So you're speaking about maybe a 15-year age span of age 20 through, sons of maybe 20 through 35, and the father, the middle-aged father, would be how old? 55? And his aged father, Rabbi Abahu, would be how old? 75, 85. It depends upon where his son, maybe 90, we don't know. Now, the story that's told is that when Rabbi Abahu would come to the gate, and he would call out from the gate, what would his son Avimi do? His son would rush to answer, and on his way he would call out, in Adumakai Hatam, he would call out, yes, yes, until he got there. What's so special about this story?
He's setting an example for his children, in that he himself was rushing to do something for his father, and he's setting an example for his children, even though they're not babies, showing how to treat your parent with respect. And the fact that he's saying yes, yes, before he even gets there, I think is very important, because older people, they want to know that somebody's there. So even before he gets there, he's saying, I'm coming.
Yes, fair. They want to know that somebody's there, but they also want to know the person who's there wants to see them and is not keeping discreetly quiet until they go on. So that his father for a minute doesn't feel redundant. There's a tendency, unfortunately, for all of us when we're not able to do what we once did, to feel redundant. We're not sure, we can't keep up with others. And he wants to make sure his father doesn't feel redundant, so he could easily say to his children, hurry up, Saba, Grandpa is at the door. Quick, go, let's go ahead. And he doesn't do that. He says to his sons, oh no, it's my mitzvah. Your time will come, it's their mitzvah. Now let's go from here over to the third story which I gave you, which was the story of Rav Asi. I'm going to read it in the Hebrew. This is what's labeled number 3. In the Hebrew it's on the page copied from the Steinsaltz Talmud, and in English it's downloaded from the internet. It's on page 97 and 98 of the English. Rav Asi Havarei Hahi Imas Keda. Rav Asi had an elderly mother. Amrale Be'ina Kashiti. She said to him, I need jewelry. Avakla. He made, or he did, or he got the jewelry for her. Begina Gavra. The next stage is she says to him, what? I need a man, I need a husband. And his response is, Nehile, which means we'll try our best. Nehile, I will try for you. Begina Gavra de Shafir Kvatach. I need a man who is Shafir. Handsome as you. What was his reaction then?
He left
her. At that point, Shvakara Lala, he left her and he went to Eretz Israel. Shamaduka Asma Abatle. He heard that she was coming after him. I apologize to you, that wasn't my phone, but I'm leaving my phone on because I have a son and a son-in-law down south. Begina Gavra de Shafir Kavatach. I need a man who is handsome as you. Shvakach la'azal la'aradi Yisrael. He left her and he went to Eretz Israel. Shamadika Azna Abate. He heard that she was coming after him. He went before Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was the preeminent sage in Tiberia. So he had come from Babylonia, and now Tiberia is going to be the city that is going to be come to first. He went before Rabbi Yochanan. Amar le mahamot seif me eret lechutz la'ayit. He said to Rabbi Yochanan, tell me, is it permissible to leave Israel to go abroad? Amar le asur. Rabbi Yochanan said, it is not permissible. This is this is at a time when travel was exceedingly dangerous, the likelihood of returning to Eretz Yisrael was slim. Rabbi Yochanan said it is not permissible to leave. So then Rabbi Asi says, well, to meet my mother, is it permissible? In other words, what do you have here balanced against each other? Why is he asking again? He received the answer, no, it's not permissible to leave the land of Israel. But now what is he introducing into the equation? Well, I have a mitzvah of kibbutz avraham, and on the other hand, I have a prohibition against leaving, and please tell me the relative weight of each of these mitzvot. Rabbi Yochanan said, I don't know. When someone on the level of Rabbi Yochanan says, I don't know, it means I don't wish to address this. He waited a bit. Hadar Ata. And then he came. In other words, he waited a bit, and then he came back to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, Asi, I see you've reconciled yourself to leaving. May God return you peacefully, in peace. Rav Asi then went before a colleague, Rabbi Elazar. He said, God forbid, is it possible that Rabbi Yochanan is angry with me? You know, in other words, I pushed him. He didn't want to give an answer, and I pushed him. Maybe he's angry with me. So Rabbi Elazar said, well, what did Rabbi Yochanan say to you? Rabbi Asi said, God should bring you back in peace. And then Rabbi Elazar answers, and if he was angry at you, he wouldn't have blessed you. Now, the Gemara is just letting us know about this dialogue, to let us know that time is passing. Time is passing because first he comes to Rabbi Yochanan, he goes home without an answer, he lets some time pass, he goes back to Rabbi Yochanan, then he goes to Rabbi Elazar to find out, is Rabbi Yochanan angered with me? Meanwhile, Shaman Arona de Ka'ati. He heard that it was her Aron, that it was her funeral bier, her casket, which was arriving. Amar Iyadi Lo Nafki. He said, had I known, I would not have gone out. This is the story. Have the story? The story is Rav Asi's mother first asks for what?
Jewelry.
Rav Asi's response? Bevakasha. She then says what? Husband. He then says?
Great.
Oh, try. She then says? A husband as attractive as you. And he then says? Shalom. Then he hears that she's following him. So he goes to inquire of Rabbi Yochanan, am I allowed to go out in order to greet her? And he gets eventually the answer that he gets. He goes out to greet her and he discovers what? It's not her. She has passed away and it is her casket which is arriving for burial in Israel. Let's leave the end of the Gemara right now and let's just look at the beginning, those three requests. How do you understand what's going on? Wendy.
First, you think, okay, she's a demanding mother, she wants jewelry. But then you start getting a little.
You think she's a what?
A demanding mother, she wants jewelry. But then you think you get a little uncomfortable that she wants a man as handsome as her son. It seems like an odd request, and you're wondering what to do, you know, with this woman in her right mind.
Ah, okay.
But you could also look at, he says, I want somebody as handsome as you, as just complimenting her son. No, he complimented the children, no, should be as good looking as you, but not meant necessarily as a higher standard.
Okay, let's hear it, you guys. Yes?
Perhaps she was thinking, you know, she, maybe she's a little senile, and she was thinking that her son reminds her of her husband.
It's possible, Yafet, you're following what Wendy is saying, and that's that this woman is... this woman is aging. You're arguing, maybe the son looks like his father. And maybe, maybe there's here a yearning for his father.
Is there another interpretation for the word handsome?
Shafir means, literally means beautiful.
So it's a physical?
Yes.
No, it would be a kind.
No, no, you can develop it in Russia from now until whatever, but it means as beautiful as you. Yes?
When they say he went out, does that mean he gave up?
Ah, the Iyadi Lonafki, had I known, I would have not have gone out. That's what you're looking at, yes?
No, I'm saying, do we understand he went out to look for somebody, or he went out again?
You mean to run? Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. He tells us the Krat Imamahu. He asked Rabbi Yochanan to go to meet my mother. What's the law? What's the law? Can I leave Israel to meet my mother? So you know then, before that point, before he says, Likrat imamahu, we don't know why he wants to leave Israel. We don't know whether he wants to leave Israel because he's running away from her, or he wants to leave Israel to go greet her. But when he says, Likrat imamahu, we know he wants to go out and to greet her. But when you look at that last line, Iyadi lonafki, you can read that last line two ways. Had I known, I would not have left. How can you read it?
That I would never have left in the first place.
And you can either read it, had I known that what?
That she was going to die.
Had I known that she would so pine for me, I would have found some way to deal with this and I would never have left in the first place. That's one way of reading it. An alternative way of reading it would be what?
That I know she's going to die, I wouldn't let Israel to read it.
Had I known it was only her casket that was coming, I would have waited and I wouldn't have gone out of Israel to meet the casket.
I don't agree with the second way because I think that a son would never say that.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
Gavin? Yes, there's a misra of halvayat hamet, of escorting the casket. But there's also prohibition against leaving Israel. So you're balancing the two mitzvot, and you could fulfill that mitzvah if you wait at the border and you continue. Now, I want to follow along from where Wendy was. Wendy is suggesting, and a number of people have echoed this, that the issue is what? That why is the mother requesting? I mean, we see a progression. We see a problematic progression. The first time the mother says, I need jewelry, why might you say, that's not an appropriate request? Why?
Because maybe the money should go to school tuition for grandchildren and not
to work. Yeah. In other words, the mother is asking for something. The mother is asking for something, which is what? Which is a luxury item. She is not asking for something. She is not saying, I need food. She is not saying, I need someone to go with me to the doctor. She's asking for a luxury item. The question is, whose decision is it to allocate the funds? And how much of a claim does Rav Asi's mother have on those funds?
And the Gemara didn't say you have to buy luxury items. It said you have to feed the world.
Exactly. So remember the Gemara always deals with Mikre Katse, always deals with extreme stories, because from there we can learn how far the halakha goes. So she's asking for something which is a luxury item, which is not something that she needs. Do you see any further progression in the story? It goes, yes.
I think she's kind of testing him, for that, to see how far he'll go. And I think when she talks about looking for someone as handsome as he is, I think it starts to get a little edible and uncomfortable, and maybe that's why he flees.
Yeah.
And that's why he says shalom below the Yitra'ot.
Right.
That, do you hear what Judy is saying? That she knows where she wants to get to. In other words, she's starting with jewelry, which is a way of making the statement, listen, I am still young and attractive, and I am still concerned with my appearance. And that's the subliminal message that comes along with the request for jewelry. And then she goes and says, and I want a husband. In other words, she has, according to Judy's reading, which is very different than Wendy's reading, according to Judy's reading, you're dealing with a woman who has a strategy. She knows where she wants to go to. And where she wants to go to, Judy says this is getting a little edible. Yes?
I just think she's starting to get some hot, and she's starting to lose it. And so the important thing is how the son, or the father for that matter, reacts to that, you know, to that senility. Do you run away? Do you decide to sit there and take it, you know, and humor the person? Or do you do something in between? So.
Yeah, fair.
So, first of all, I'm very confused by the story. I'm not sure what good diet or bad diet is, or what we're supposed to take away. Is this supposed to be an example of Kibbutz Aim? That's very cool. Secondly, it reminds me of the idea of stucco and the idea of stucco. It's not necessarily just the basics. It's also to restore them to a position, to help them live in the position they occupied before they had the next step. So just because the mother didn't need the basics, the basics of food and shelter and clothing, doesn't mean that part of kibbutz is to give her the honor she obviously needed and wasn't getting, which may be the jewelry and the husband would say. So that's us.
Absolutely. So far, I'm still waiting because so far we have the Rambam present in the room. The Rambam is sitting at this table. Rabbi Meir Halevi Abulafia is sitting at that table. And, Rabbi Meir Halevi Abulafia is not sitting here. Yasha Shlomo of Shlomo Luria is sitting at that table. So we have the Rambam and Rabbi Shlomo Luria, and I'm still waiting for Rabbi Meir Halevi Abulafia to join us. Any other reading of the story? Stacey?
I think she goes from request, like, the fact that he so easily accommodates the jewelry means to me...
Could you speak louder?
The fact that he accommodates the jewelry seemingly easy means that it's not, it doesn't seem like it's cumbersome for him to do. Like, it doesn't, immediately he goes, he gets to the jewelry. Even finding her companionship, a husband, to me also, is not necessarily over the line. It's when she does, she crosses the line with the very last request where she says, that he should look like you. It's also because the son presumably is so much younger than his mother that the idea that you're going to find somebody that looks like your son at that age, and it's not the media of his chesed that she's asking for, it's his physical appearance. It's odd and it's discomforting.
So what is she asking for?
I think she wants all of his attention, and I think she wants sort of inappropriate attention from her son.
Ah, okay. Rabbi Meir Halevi of Lafia has joined us. Tina.
I didn't hear that last one.
The last comment that Stacy was making is that you have a mother here who's making excessive demands. The demands are inappropriate and they're excessive. In other words, he has done his best to meet the demands, not to evaluate whether the demands are appropriate or inappropriate. One time. The second time, there's a little bit of hesitation. He says, we'll try our best. But by the third time, he says, no, here's where the rule needs to be established. And what you're dealing with in the mitzvah of Kibbutz Av V'Em, as in so many mitzvot, is you're dealing with a balance that needs to be struck between an ideal and then how it plays itself out in a real situation. Now, obviously, the ideal is Avimi, who runs to his father when his father is calling at the gate and says, yes, yes, I'm coming. But the question that the story of Rabbi Assi is trying to put before us is, okay, we've had the ideal, but now what happens when we're dealing with a dysfunctional situation for one reason or another. So how does the mitzvah of Kibbutz Ein play itself out? There was one more comment to you. Yes.
This may sound a little strange, but when I read about this woman, she looks like she had a certain status, a certain lifestyle that she enjoyed, you know. So I'm thinking, you know, I relate to her as, let's say, an Evyon as opposed to a Nani. An Evyon had money and had a certain status, more suitable. And then Nani is always, you know, poor. So isn't there a mitzvah of trying to treat the Evyon in keeping that person and giving him a lifestyle that he was accustomed to? Isn't there something about that?
She may be struggling with the distance between where she is today and where she once was. And that jewelry might be extremely important to her in terms of feeling like herself. Okay, yes, Gary.
So if you go back to source one, it says you have to honor, you know, so the jewelry sort of fits the clothing and covering a bit in a sense of honor, but what seems to happen is she wants to take her son's place, as opposed to he not being able to sit in her place, she wants to sit in his place.
She wants to be, I think you're pointing out something very interesting. She's not viewing herself in terms of her own age. When she says, I want a husband who is as beautiful as you, what she is saying is on a certain level. What she could be saying is, I don't want to live as a 70, 80, 90-year-old. I wish to live as a 30, 40-year-old.
But I guess what I'm saying is he's not allowed to sort of sit in her place out of fear.
Right.
But she's making her place, his place, her place, and then saying, you can't sit here.
Yeah,
and expanding her place.
Yafema, old. I never thought of it that way. Yes.
Is it possible that she signed over her whole fortune to him and put him in charge of her parents?
Ah. And now she's got to go to him. Okay. I want to look at three of the Rishonim, Gabby.
I suppose it's a stretch, but in a more literary way, when she said, I don't have ornaments, she's referring to the past, but not to jewelry. The ornament of being a wife, the ornament of a husband, and I guess her son and her youth once.
Yes.
The days of yore. Not the jewels, but the, you know, the metaphoric jewels of being a wife and a mother and the other.
So how does one deal with such a situation? The Gemara does deal, and later Halakha does deal with what one is permitted to do under such circumstances. And we read three of the Rishonim, and three of the Rishonim are sitting here in this room. But the question I would ask is if you, both Gabby and Gary, are reading it exactly the same way, if there is here a yearning for youth on her part, how does one deal with that? How does one help such a person? What do you do? You know, I just want to insert something parenthetically from Megillat Ruth. I referred you to Megillat Ruth, and I want to look at it for just a moment. I don't have it here. Most of you have it on the table, but thank you. Parent Beit of Megillat Ruth is very difficult. It's a Megillah that we're all very familiar with. Towards the end of Perek Beit, when Ruth comes home with all of the sheaves that she's carrying, or she isn't carrying the sheaves, she's carrying the grain, and she comes home with a very large measure of grain, Naomi says to her, she She says, where did you gather today? What I get out of that sentence, where did you gather today, and Ruth's answer in the next sentence, when she says, Shem ha'ish asher asiti bo hayom, the man with whom I gathered, from whom I gathered today, that word today is occurring twice, is that even though we have certain tendency to read the Megillat from a different thing, oh, she goes into the field and she's immediately redeemed. That word today, where did you gather today, tells me she's been gathering for many days. And for many days she has been coming home with a very limited amount, and suddenly the picture changes, but it doesn't change in the beginning. She's been gathering and gathering, and she's been at the fringes of society, and no one has been noticing her. She's been sort of a transparent individual, and today Boaz intervenes. I want to look at Boaz's words, because I think they give us a little bit of a formula of how to address someone when what we're seeking to do is to comfort. When Boaz approaches Ruth and he says to her, he first says to her, "Halo shamakiti al terchi b'kot b'sadeh acher v'gam lo ta'avuri zeh b'kot b'kin na'rotan." In three different languages he says, don't go anywhere else, stay here in my fields, glean here, and when you're thirsty, go to the, jerrycans and help yourself to the water. And she falls on her face. She says, why did I find favor in your eyes to recognize me? And I am a stranger. Now listen very carefully to Boaz's response. She has said, why did you recognize me? I'm a stranger. Because she is going to end by saying, Nichamtani, you have comforted me. And I want to know what it is about Boaz's words that give her comfort. Because whenever we're speaking with someone who's sick, someone who's aged, it can be of any age, or someone who has lost abilities that they once had, the question is, how do we comfort someone? So look at Boaz's words. I'm going to translate that. Immediately afterwards, Ruth says, Micham Tani, you have comforted me. Look at the words. Boaz answered and said to her, who gave the God? It has been related to me. Kol asher asit et chamotech, all that you have done for your mother-in-law. Achrei mochishek, after your husband died. V'ta'azvi avich v'imech, you left your father and your mother, ve'eretz moladitech, and the land of your fathers, and your birthplace. You left your father and your mother, and your birthplace. And you came to a nation that you didn't know yesterday, the day before. Yishalem Hashem Ta'aleh. May God reward your deed. Pe'ula is deed. May God reward your deed. And may your reward be complete from the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take haven. Why do you think Ruth answers, Micham Tani, you have comforted me? And just keep in mind, you're not dealing with someone who went out to the field, and on the first day, immediately, Boaz comes over to her, riding on a white horse, in order to tell her, stay here. You're dealing with someone who, day after day, has been bleeding. She's been transparent within society, and now Boaz comforts her. What in his words gives her comfort? What do you think?
Recognition.
What do you think? Yes.
Recognition of her efforts.
Yishalem Hashem po'aleich does not mean may God do loving kindness to you. It's what? It's coming to you. Why? Because of your efforts. And what are your efforts? Yes. He's seeing her ornaments. Her ornaments are her good deeds. He's looking at her and seeing her ornamented. Yes?
It's when he saw how she respected her mother. That I think what he did also.
He saw what she did for her mother-in-law. What else did he see?
He's acknowledging what she left. She left.
He's acknowledging what she sacrificed.
But I think it's also the sense of being able to do something sort of correct, to, like, mida k'neged mida, like, she's done chesed not just for her mother-in-law, but for the Jewish people. She threw her lot in with us, and so we have to then also care for her.
You threw your lot in with us, and if you look at the pasuk, does it remind you of any character within Jewish history, within any biblical character? Why does it remind you of Abraham?
Because he left his parents.
Because Abraham left his birthplace, he left his parents, and in a certain sense, he's saying to her, you're not an outsider, you're part of us. Your story is our story. You can't get to a more core story of the Jewish people than lech lecha me'aretz lecha mi'lolan lecha mi'beit avicha, leave your father's house and go to the land which I am commanding you to go to, the land which I will show you. And he's saying to her, your story is our story. And that means you're not an outsider. He's recognizing her deeds. She says, Nichamtani. It's very different when there's someone who is offering you simply services. Until that point, he was offering services, and that's wonderful. But that's not what gave her comfort. That gave her services. Comfort is something very different from services. The services are critical. Without those services, you can't get anywhere. But comfort involves recognition of what? What the person is dealing with? What the person has done? How the person fits in. And it's all of those things that Boaz is giving. Now, I just want to return to the three views of the story of Rav Asi, which we have in the Rishonim. And I told you we have three Rishonim that are sitting here in the room. Look at on the page of sources, which you have in the typed page, which you have in the Hebrew and the English. Source number 6 is Rambam. And Wendy, you deserve to read it.
One father and mother was lost their creator.
Oh, I want it in Hebrew. Okay, that's the end of the Rambam. And the Rambam read it to us in English.
One father and mother who lost their clear opinions should attempt to conduct themselves with them according to their understanding until there is mercy upon them if they are healed. And if he cannot, because they have become deeply senile, let him leave them and go and engage others to care for them as he fits them.
In other words, what is Rambam inserted into the story? Her
mental state.
He is interpreting this as her mental state, and what's he inserting into the story that the Gemara doesn't tell us, but Rambam understands it. He's saying what? If the woman has unfortunately become so senile that you can't care for her, then what? Yeah. On one hand, you are permitted to leave. However, you have to get someone to provide those services that you are not able to provide. Now, where is Rambam getting that from the story? The story doesn't say that. But what is Rambam reasoning? Well, you have a upon you. But if you are unable to provide those services yourself, you're permitted to engage someone else to provide them, and then you are permitted to leave. So Rabbi is understanding Rav Asi's mother as being Sina. Rav Asi doesn't realize that initially, or he does realize that initially, and he attempts, but it gets to a point where the requests are, where he can't do it, and therefore, at this point, says Rambam, he's permitted to move back and to engage someone else. This is a heart-rending situation which so many of us face. So many of us face this. You should know, it's very interesting. Through the Rishonim, if you go through the Rishonim, the Achronim, the Ashkenazim and Sephardim line up on different sides of this issue. The Sephardim are those who say, who follow the Rambam, and the Ashkenazim say, who is it possible to engage, who could possibly be as sensitive to the parent as one can oneself? There's a language which the parent and the child share, which no outsider is going to be able to share. It is possible that this has to do with different social conditions in both societies, and that in Sephardi societies, it was possible to engage someone that Ashkenazim couldn't, but there's a fault line between the Ashkenazim and the Sephardim. Now that's one way of reading the story. A second way of reading the story is number 7. Stacy, you're the one who read number 7. Read it to us. This is Rabbi Meir Haredi, Rabbi Matya.
Rav Asi had an elderly mother, had I known I would not have left, and learned from here that the mitzvah of honoring one's father and mother is great, for even if they cast upon things that were inappropriate for them, so long as they are not forbidden, he is obligated to them. However, if he saw that they made excessive demands, the son is permitted to leave them, leave to another country. If he hears they are coming after him, he is obligated to react to greet them, and to treat them with honor, even from Israel abroad, like the matter of Rav Asi.
Ravasi Habele Ad Iyadi Lomaki, Usha'eni Negitado Mitzvah Kibud Abaim. This is number 7. So great is the mitzvah of father and mother. Da'afilu bichumi men varim she'enam hadudim lahem, she'enam asuim. That even if they ask for things which are not appropriate, so long as they are not prohibited, chayav la'asotam, one must do so. Aba'im ra'am ben she'en marifim v'ta. But if the son sees that that they are exceeding, that it is excessive. The son can leave and go to another country. In other words, the halakha is saying, in the ideal circumstances, the father will ask, or the mother will ask, the dependent person will ask for things which the son can do. But if it becomes excessive, then what does halakha say? One is permitted to establish limitation. That halakha is not permitting the parent to exploit the child. And there's a corollary of this, which is a machlokes between Rambam and, again, the Ashkenazim, the Rambam. What happens if there's an evil parent? Is one... does one have to honor an evil parent? And the answer of the Rambam is yes. Not to follow the commands of the evil parent, give honor. And the Rambam says that one does not need in any way to give honor to an evil parent. And unfortunately, in a lot of contemporary situations, we deal with this, with a parent who is an abusive parent, and one needs to teach the child to separate from an abusive parent and to build their own life. Now the final one is, Judy, I'm going to read this instead of asking you to read. It's number 8, Yamsha. Unless you want to read, do you want to read? Yamsha Shlomo. Stacy, we let you get away without the Hebrew, but Judy, you're not going to, I don't know why we let Stacy go away. Judy, you want to read us the Hebrew of Yamsha Shlomo and Shlomo Luria?
אני אומר, שיטה הסיכו, אם ינחם וילך, שמי יצבר ושומרם. כמו שכתב, ואינו דומה לעובדה דאימה רב עצי.
Wait, I just want to interpolate and then you'll continue reading. What Yamsha Shlomo is reacting to is the comment on the Rambam of the writing of Rabbi Avraham ben David. And Rabbi Avraham ben David, if you look up in source number 6, you'll see in the middle Hasagat HaRavi, Mishan Yitrafada HaKosha Aviv V'chulei Yomichem V'yolegro Yitzaveh Aferim Ha'anem Paro'ui, Aleph Aleph is Amar Avraham. Avraham says, Ein Zohora Anachona, the Rambam is not ruling correctly. If he goes and he leaves the parent, who can he command to care for the parent? So the Yamsha Shlomo then says, what Judy just did, Ani Omer, I say, that this is a correct objection that the Rabbi is making to the Rambam. If he goes, who will he command to care for them, as it says? Now, Judy, begin reading again for Eino Domer. The Eino Domer.
So Eino Domer, the Eldad, the Imah, the Rav Asi, the Shem Lo Haitam,
the Shem.
Oh, sorry, the Shem Lo Haitam, the Terefet, the Nyan, the Shemcha, the Shmira, Ela, Sha'ala, Shalo, the Hogan, Moro,
You know what? There's a word here that is a misprint. It's not shalom kahogen. It's sha'alat kahogen. I don't know. It's sha'alat kahogen miralev. Go ahead. Okay. The Yamsha Shlomo says as follows. The story of Rav Asi's mother is not... is not a story of a senile parent. A senile parent you care for. But Rav Asi's mother is not an example of a senile parent. She's an example of Sha'alat Yehogin. She asked properly from an evil heart. What does he mean by properly?
She's saying.
She's lucid, but she is evil. In other words, what she is trying to do, says the Yamsha Shlomo, is she's looking for Giluy Arayot. She is looking for a relationship with her son, and therefore, Chalach Halachlo, therefore he disappeared, he vaporized, and said goodbye, and not Lehitra Ot. So there are three ways we've had of reading this episode. I want to sum up the shiur now. There are three ways we've had of reading this episode. Way number one is that you are dealing with a senile parent, and Rav Asi does his very best to deal with the situation until he just can't. And then according to Rambam, what he does is he engages someone in his stead. The second way is, no, she's not senile. You're just dealing with a parent here who is high maintenance, and that he tries, but that halakha gives you a sort of safety valve, that if you have done what you can, you are permitted to say, beyond this point, I'm not able to. Beyond this point, I'm not going to be able to function. And it's very important that halakha gives us a model of this, because the same way there's a model of the ideal relationship, halakha also gives us a model of a great sage who was able to say, I've done what I could, but beyond this, I cannot do. And it's very important that we know, not just in parent-child relationships, that we know in all relationships, that we are committed to establish gvulot, that we're committed to establish limitations, and it's very important that halakha contains an example of a great sage who is saying, I've done what I could, but beyond this, I cannot, and halakha says, you're not expected to. The third way of reading is that you have here an evil parent, and there, an abusive, an evil parent, and there the issue is, as soon as the son recognizes it, the son distances himself. Then I'd just like to repeat, we then look to Edward Lackwood for a moment to see how does one give comfort. And we saw that it's not just a matter of providing physical needs, but it's a matter of recognizing what a person has done, recognizing who the person is, and recognizing that the person is part. This is day one of our two-day symposium, or colloquium, excuse me, which is dealing with very real issues in our lives, to which halakha gives us guidance. Judaism never gives us all the answers. The script is always written by the Jew in partnership with halakha. It's not written by the halakha itself. It doesn't make our lives easy. But halakha does give us guidance for situations. I want to tell you what we'll be doing tomorrow. I selected the topic for tomorrow in dealing with the general rubric of cancellation of women saying Kaddish. And my inspiration for this was what has now become so well known, Racheli Frankel's recitation of Kaddish at the funeral of her son. And we'll be looking at the sources, we'll be looking at why there are rabbis who are saying that a woman cannot say Kaddish, and why there are those who are saying that it is permissible for a woman to say Kaddish. So, I'm glad, yes, but
I'm not really we know that
Racheli Frankel is one of the three mothers. I think many of us have seen her, have been awed by her, by the strength of character in which she has been so positive, so affirming of thank you to the policemen, the mothers of the policemen who are helping us search for the bodies, the mothers of the soldiers. Racheli is a very senior member of Mishmat. She is one of the earliest Yaratzot Halakha, and in fact she told me, and she is a teacher of Talmud Halakha at Mishmat, very central person in the Mishmat faculty, and she told me that during the Shiva, she doesn't know how many women came to her and said, thank you for your services as a Yoetzet Halakha. You don't know how you've saved our family. So we're all part of the story all together. And I just want to end in the same spirit that I began this, praying that Hashem watch over all of our soldiers, enable them to do the work that needs to be done for the sake of Israel's future, and they should all come home safe.
Amen.
Wendy?
Yeah, I just want, if I may say something. First of all, everybody in this room, Connor, really wants to thank you from the bottom of our hearts that you found the strength to actually come to New York and do this, hopefully, in this year.